Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
Thinking about my other artist friends who are mothers, and just kind of the sacrifices that people make and to try to juggle things and kind of do all these things and make time for all these different roles that we play. And it's a lot. And sometimes it can feel like it's unnoticed or overlooked, or sometimes like just not appreciated, even though it's like so much weight. And I also kind of thought about, well, what other areas besides the household do women kind of play a weighty role? And I just think about it in community also, just women's service to our overall communities. Again, that sometimes like goes like overlooked.
I'm so honored to welcome Latoya M. Hobbs to the Artist Mother Podcast today. Latoya is an artist, wife, and mother of two from Little Rock, Arkansas, who is currently living and working in Baltimore, Maryland. She received her BA in painting from the University of Arkansas at Little Rock and her MFA in printmaking from Purdue University. Latoya's work deals with figurative imagery that addresses the ideas of beauty, cultural identity, and womanhood as they relate to women of the African diaspora. She creates a fluid and symbiotic relationship between her printmaking and painting practice, producing works that are marked by texture, color, and bold patterns. Her exhibition record includes several national and international exhibits in locations such as the National Art Gallery of Namibia, Prism Art Fair from Miami, Florida, the Woman Made Gallery in Chicago, Illinois, among others. And she has won 2020 Artist in Residence Award at the Joan Mitchell Center in New Orleans, Louisiana. She's the winner of the 2020 Jane and Walter Sondheim Artscape Prize and more. Latoya also devotes her time to teaching and inspiring young artists as a professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art. And she is the founding member of Black Women of Print, a collective whose vision it is to make visible the narratives and works of Black women printmakers, past, present, and the future. Latoya, I can't wait to talk to you. Thank you so much for taking the time. I really, really appreciate it. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Okay, let's dig in by having you share something about your childhood that connects to your life as an artist today. I'm curious to know if you have always wanted to be an artist.
I can't say that I've always wanted to be an artist by profession, but I can say that I've always been interested and active in the arts. So I guess one of my earliest memories of kind of engaging in art was maybe in the third or fourth grade. So we had some like this art class, and I can remember like making like tissue paper roses and there were some portraits activity that we were kind of introduced to. And I just kind of remember like other people liking mine and kind of asking me to help them with their project too. So I think that's kind of the earliest instance, but yeah, I've always been kind of engaged in the arts, not just visual arts, but performing arts as well. So, you know, I sang in choir and did dance team all throughout high school. And a little bit in college also.
Growing up in Little Rock, did you know any like full-time artists? Like, do you think the kind of not necessarily knowing you wanted to be an artist, but liking art had something to do with, you know, maybe not having models in your life?
I would say so. I think we're not really, don't really consider that as an avenue in terms of being a profession. I know right. I didn't know any professional artists, and I really didn't know like any artists kind of in general, except for, you know, like Picasso or
right.
Michelangelo, you know, because those names are, people say those names all the time. So that was kind of like the only really nice context for art that I had, other than like kind of seeing like artist reproductions that my mom and dad would hang. But yeah, I never really had a concept of like a fine artist. Like I think about today, like my peers who are artists mm-hmm. or other well-established artists who I, you know, kind of model my practice after.
So at what point was it that you decided to go to school for art? Were you already enrolled in college and like were exposed to the arts then, or kind of how did you, like, what was the crossroads for sort of committing to that path?
Yeah. So like I said, I've always done art, like in high school. And I think my last like big high school art class was maybe when my like junior or senior year of high school. And mm-hmm. then after that, it was like, cause I had no examples of like, you know, having art as a profession is not even something that I considered that I could do. And so I actually started as a biology major. Right?
Yep. Yeah, been there. So I was an education major.
Oh, cool. Yeah. So I started as a biology major. And I was like, oh, I'm going to do pre-med and I'm going to be a pediatrician. And but yeah, so like when I got into the program, I kind of just tried to stick with it as best I could, even though I wasn't really happy. Mm-hmm. And I realized that all I really wanted to do was learn about the body. Like I really wasn't interested in chemistry and like organic chemistry and right. like some of my like biology classes. I remember we had a whole like a biology class and it was the whole class was about like the fruit fly. I was like, I do not want to be here.
You're like, oh my God.
Yeah. So, you know,
this is what I'm paying this much money for.
Well, yeah, it was just like no interest. And then even right. like in some of the labs for some of the like chemistry classes, I was like, I would rather be anywhere else but here.
Right.
And I really, you know, I just realized that I really just wanted to learn about the body and the anatomy and how the body worked. I really wasn't interested in anything else. So and I guess, you know, that's kind of, I guess, why I'm a figurative artist now.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting to know that thread is there just because, you know, knowing your work now and how great you are at, you know, drawing and creating paintings about the human body, like, you know, even as an undergrad student, maybe not seeing that connection. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I just love that experience of like looking back, you know, and you don't think you're on the path until you can kind of look back and see that maybe that was
all of these things kind of lead you to this moment. And so I finally got to like where I was like, I can't do this anymore. I stay here, I'm probably gonna not continue to do well in school. So I just kind of said, well, let me just get back to the things that I enjoy. Cause at that point I had stopped doing like art mm-hmm. altogether. I think I wasn't dancing anymore either. And so I was just like, I'm not happy. And let me, you know, find that joy and find the joy in the things that I really love doing. And so I just kind of started taking like some art classes here and there. And I started just taking dance classes mm-hmm. while I was still trying to like struggle through this biology degree. But I decided like, okay, I'm going to change my major. What can I do? Mm-hmm. But again, I still really didn't have like a lot of examples of like art mm-hmm. as a, you know, as a profession. Mm-hmm. I just knew I loved to do it.
Yeah.
And then I was like, well, it's kind of unrealistic for me to try to be like a professional dancer at this point. Cause you know, you kind of have to start like from when you're like, you know, seven.
Yes.
So even though I love dance, but I was like, well, that's probably not going to work. Mm-hmm. So I think I was an apparel studies major for maybe a semester.
Okay.
So, you know, I have, you know, interest in fashion. I was trying to be a model at one point in time. And so I did that for a semester. And then I was just like, well, I ended up transferring school. So at the time I was at the University of Arkansas at Fayetteville.
Okay.
And then I ended up transferring, to the university in my hometown, which is in Little Rock, University of Arkansas at Little Rock.
Was so, Crystal Bridges there when you were an undergrad student? I know that's relatively new.
Yeah, it's still pretty new. I think I had... I was in graduate school by the time Crystal Bridges came about. Yeah.
That's such a great special place. I got to go there for the first time this summer and man, it's so great.
Yeah. It's a really beautiful place. Like not just like the architecture of the museum is awesome, but just like the surrounding mm-hmm. of it is really beautiful.
Yeah.
So yeah, so I transferred to UALR and I was like, okay, well, let me just try one more time with this biology. So by that time I had enough credits to have like a minor in biology.
Okay.
So I was like, I gave it one more try. I was like, nah, that's not it.
I love it. You gave it an honest try several times.
Yeah. And so
you're like, sorry, mom and dad, just can't do it.
Yeah. And so at my university, they had a program where you basically, instead of having like one main major, you basically could do like three minors as your major.
Oh, cool.
And so I was like, okay, well, I already have biology, so I'm just going to pick up art and dance. And so I just, you know, kind of started the process of having like a minor in art and minor in dance. Mm. But when I got around to taking, it was either drawing or printmaking with one of my professors, his name was AJ Smith. He kind of just like talked to me and was like, what do you want to do? Mm-hmm. Like, what are you trying to do? I was like, well, I know I want to be an artist and, you know, possibly, you know, want to think about the option to teach maybe. And he was like, well, you just need to commit to being an art major. Like, you know, you just need to go ahead and commit to being an art major and it'll kind of set you on the path for what you're saying that you want to do. And so that, I believe that was in 2009. So, well, no, 2007 is when I decided, okay, I'm going to be, you know, committed to being an artist. I'm going to change my major to art and I'm just going to put in the extra time to finish out that degree. So it took a little while longer for my undergrad degree than what I intended, but I'm glad I put in like the extra time, like on the front end. Cause you know, I was seeing so many people who are older, like older non-traditional students who had like got a degree in what they didn't really want to do. And then they worked for like 20 years and now they're back to try to do what they really wanted to do in the first place. And so I was like, yeah, I don't really want that to be my experience. And so I'm just going to put in the extra time now.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, again, it's just interesting that you had, you know, someone who was somewhat of a model who kind of, you know, spoke to you and gave you that permission, I guess, to, you know, sort of explore the thing that was calling to you all along, but maybe that wasn't made visible for you in a tangible way and in front of your eyes, you know?
Yeah. And also, during that process, I met, my husband. Well, we were just friends at the time, but when I decided to be like, okay, you need to be committed to being an artist, like you need to get better at what you're doing. Like you need to have some art friends. Cause at the time I really didn't have any like other artists, like there were no other artists in my family. Mm-hmm. You know, except the people that I kind of saw in class. But yeah, I became good friends, with my husband's name is Harrison. And so he would just kind of challenge me and he also encouraged me as well, like, well, you need to do this and you need to do that. And we would just have conversations and he would list artist names and I had no idea who they were. And he was like, how do you not know these people? And you say you're an artist. So he kind of really encouraged me to engage in the practice of looking at art more, just learning about more artists, particularly artists of color. Because, you know, they weren't really, unfortunately, not very many artists of color were taught in like my history classes.
Right.
Professor Smith, he did introduce me to Elizabeth Catlett's work, and that was kind of like the springing board inspiration for my printmaking practice. And so learning about her kind of led me to learn about other people. So yeah, during that time, just being in that environment, advice from professors and also advice from, you know, artist friends that I was starting to make and come in contact with too.
So is your husband an artist too?
Yes, he is. Oh, awesome. He was in, when I was in undergrad, he was finishing up his graduate degree that you were at the same school.
Awesome. And then, you know, we don't have to talk too much about your grad school experience, but I just wanted to say that I'm now in Indiana and my husband teaches at Purdue.
Oh, really?
Fort Wayne.
Oh, okay.
So, cool. You know, it's like the second biggest campus, I guess, of Purdue. But I never thought I would live in the Midwest. But then I saw Purdue on your bio and I was like, oh, that's cool to know that you spent some time here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lafayette's a couple hours from here, but anyway, you know, Indiana bringing people together, I guess. Okay, Latoya, now that you've kind of talked a little bit about your path, deciding to be an artist, I would love for you to describe your work. I think most people who listen to this episode are already going to have seen it and are familiar with it. You know, we've shared your work on the platform before, and you've given artist talks and stuff to our audience, which is so exciting. But I would love for you, just in case there's somebody out there who has not seen your work, to just describe what it looks like and talk a little bit about your process and some of the materials that you use.
Okay, so in terms of my artistic background, I am a painter and printmaker. So I did my undergrad degree at UALR in painting and then my MFA in printmaking at Purdue University. My work is primarily figurative, more portraiture based. I primarily do images of women in my family and in my community. So right now I am kind of on this journey of combining my print and painting practice together. So I still do like traditional printmaking in terms of like printing an edition on paper. And then I also still kind of do more traditional painting. But right now, what I'm really excited about is creating mixed media works that marry both of those elements of both of those processes together. Mm-hmm. And so with a lot of my newer works, like they're on wood panels. And so the wood panel allows me the flexibility to kind of do everything on the same surface. I can carve into it like I would, you know, carve a relief block. I can paint into it. I can collage into it and kind of do everything on the same surface. So that's kind of what I'm really excited about now in terms of my practice. I also use a lot of patterns, texture. I do use color sometimes, but I'm kind of working in a more muted palette right now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's kind of my work in a nutshell.
And as we've mentioned, your work is primarily figurative. So you're either kind of creating portraits or sort of, you know, scenes where figures are present. Could you talk a little bit about like who you choose to draw or paint and, you know, kind of how you decide on your models or the figures that you're focusing on in the work?
Yeah. So like I mentioned earlier, I primarily do people in my community. So I personally find it really satisfying to do images of people that I know. I feel like the kind of connection or relationship that I have with them kind of comes through in the work. Now, that's not to say that I, you know, haven't done images of people that I don't have like a close connection with, which I mean, I have, but it's my preference to work with people that I know, you know, and I'm kind of always connecting. Well, not always, but I've connected with new people over the past couple of years. So I've been able to kind of add more people to the list of models that I work with. But a lot of images are family members. This past couple of years, I've been doing a lot of self-portraits. And then also some of images are people from my Black Women of Print collective that you mentioned earlier in my bio. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I really like this idea of exploring the everyday woman and presenting them in a light that sometimes people may not be familiar with or sometimes is kind of overlooked. So. Mm-hmm.
I'm thrilled to partner with our new sponsor, Cozy, to tell you more about this incredible app. Cozy is an app that specializes in keeping busy families organized. It's an app designed for multiple users to help you and your spouse, partner, or caretakers juggle school schedules, practices, meetings, doctor's appointments, and more. Cozy tracks everyone's schedules and events in one place with a shared color-coded calendar. A feature I love is the app reminds others about your family's events so that you don't have to be the one who does that. It's easy to get started. You can even pull in events from your family's existing personal work and school calendars. You can have Cozy send everyone in your family a weekly or a daily email that shares your agenda. And I personally love the meal planning section. You can create a shared grocery list that lets the whole family add items in real time. So you'll never find yourself at the store without the list. Not that that's happened to you, but it's happened with me before. That list is always on your phone and it's up to date. If you need help figuring out dinner, there's even a place to store recipes and plan meals ahead. The best part? Cozy is free. Just download Cozy, C-O-Z-I, the Family Organizer app from your app store. That's Cozy, C-O-Z-I, and get the free app today. Visit your phone's app store or Google Play to download Cozy today. Start feeling more organized and keep your family communications simple this season. Thank you so much, Cozy, for sponsoring the Artist Mother podcast. It seems, at least from, you know, following you on social media and, you know, having known about your work for several years now, it seems that a lot of the more recent work is more autobiographical. Is that true? And could you maybe talk just about that overlap, kind of including scenes from your home life and, you know, including yourself in the work more?
Yeah, so that I think that's primarily because of the series that I'm working on or that I have been working on for the past couple of years. The series is called Salt of the Earth. And I'm basically personifying women as salt in terms of them being preservers of their family and culture and community. And so a big part of the underlying theme of the work is this idea of the matriarch and also self-preservation. And so when I came up with the idea for Salt of the Earth, I was actually in graduate school. I knew I was going to title it. That title came to me and I was like, okay, that'll be a cool like title for a series. But I really didn't understand what that meant to me personally until I became a mother. And so that phrase salt of the earth comes from a Bible scripture in Matthew 5:13. It basically talks about you being the salt of the earth. But what if the salt loses its saltiness? It's not good for anything but to be cast out, basically. I'm kind of paraphrasing. And so when I thought about, when I was like, okay, well, I need to, you know, delve more into what this series is going to be about. So when I, you know, researched where that phrase came from and thinking about that scripture, for me, I thought about like women, like salt, like as a preserver. And so that lined up with what I felt about my experience as being a mother up in that point. So like I said, I had the idea for the series in like 2012, 2013, but it wasn't until maybe 2015, 2016, where I actually started to try to like put it into play. And then I kind of had some like setbacks and things, of course, like I started actually having children. And so after my second son was born and he was a few years old, I was like, this is what salt of the earth means to me. This is a big part of what that means to me. And I was kind of thinking about how I function in our household. And
yeah, tell me more specifically, like what are some of the tangible things that you sort of identify with being a preserver or being, you know, inspiring about the characteristics of like these matriarchs sort of in your life and becoming a matriarch yourself?
Yeah. So just literally everything, like the kind of the glue that kind of holds the family together. And me saying that doesn't take anything away from my husband and the role that he plays, but I was just kind of thinking about the interaction that I have with my two sons. And so they're kind of like really dependent on you for everything. And then just seeing like my relationship with them. And also just kind of thinking about the overall role that I play in the household. So that's kind of where that, you know, that's the salt, that's the preserver. So we preserve our culture through teaching our children about our culture. And I'm also like a homeschooling mom. So I'm kind of preserving them in terms of like their education. And so pretty much everything, all their interactions with me are kind of so important and they're going to shape them in so many different ways. So I was just kind of thinking about the weight of that role. And then I also just kind of thinking about my other artist friends who are mothers, and just kind of the sacrifices that people make and to try to juggle things and kind of do all these things and make time for all these different roles that we play. And it's a lot. And sometimes it can feel like it's unnoticed or overlooked, or sometimes like it's not appreciated, even though it's like so much weight. And I also kind of thought about, well, what other areas besides the household do women kind of play a weighty role? And I just think about in community also, just women's service to our overall communities. Again, that sometimes like goes like overlooked. And, you know, if you think about a lot of like the historical movements, particularly that happened like within the Black community, like the civil rights movements or like the Black power movement, you kind of only see the males as, you know, the people who are like the spokespersons for some of those movements. And if you do have like female figures, it's like only a few of them. But if you think about the legwork and all the organizing and all the behind the scenes things that needed to be done for those things to be successful, they were done by women.
Yes.
You know, and even just thinking about like in my like growing up in church. You know, women did so many things, you know, and so just kind of thinking about like when I say that the preservers of family, culture and community, I'm really thinking about all those three spheres, like in the home space, out in the community and also kind of in the culture, like overall.
I love too how like, you know, what I'm hearing you reference a lot is, you know, the idea of invisible labor, right? It's not always the labor that is on the platform or kind of out there for the world to see, but it's like what is holding everything together. And I love that you're using salt as a metaphor for that because, well, you know, like you said in the Bible version, it is something that you don't see, but without it, you know, food has no taste essentially, right? Like it, it enhances our experience of, you know, eating food and yet it kind of disappears and becomes something that is not, you know, is not visible. So that's just such an interesting way to think about, kind of what you're presenting as being sort of the labor that like is holding things together, but also is often the things that we can't like quantify or, you know, sort of put out there. And so I love that your work specifically is very, you know, bold in that it is like literal depictions of women, you know, taking up space, like presenting their bodies, asking viewers to behold, you know, these matriarchs, right?
And then I'm also kind of questioning like what a matriarch is. So I kind of like in some of my writings, I've kind of used the term modern matriarch. I haven't coined that term, but I think I kind of, when I see think about the term modern matriarch, I think about like women in my generation versus like maybe women in my mom's generation. And so I feel like we kind of navigate motherhood in a different way, or we have, I think we kind of take on more. And kind of have to balance a little bit more sometimes. So just kind of how this modern idea of what a matriarch is, but I'm also kind of questioning, like, do you have to have children in order to be considered a matriarch? Right. Cause I feel like there are lots of women who have not, who have been instrumental in my life, but they aren't like my birth mother, or women who, build communities, or they birth ideas, or they birth communities, not necessarily like having birthed a physical child, but like the things that they have done have birthed communities where they bring people together, or where they have like enhanced something or done something like to, you know, move the culture and move the community forward.
Maybe they relate to mother more as a verb than, you know, a specific title.
But then it's just like all aspects of it too, not just like the mothering part, but how do I maintain just me, LaToya, the artist, you know, or not even LaToya, the artist, but just LaToya, the person. at the same time. And that kind of talks about like this idea of self-preservation. Because, you know, the second part of that scripture, it talks about salt, you know, being important, but it says what happens when the salt loses its flavor? Like it's not good for anything anymore. And so I kind of think about this idea of like, again, what I mentioned about we take on so many things now and we kind of are playing so many different roles, but in the midst of like taking care of our family and pouring out to other people and pouring out, you know, to this organization and I'm pouring out to my job, but at the same time, like, you know, I can't pour if I'm empty. So, you know, what am I doing to make sure that I'm also preserving myself in the process? And so those are kind of some of like the underlying themes of the work, but I also, you know, still touch on the ideas of beauty, kind of spirituality, just kind of womanhood in general. And so you mentioned like some of the scenes where I'm kind of showing like people in like spaces. And so I think right now the project that I've just finished up, like this really big project, is called Carving Out Time. It's kind of like the zenith of this Salt of the Earth series. I wouldn't say that it's the end of it, because I feel like there's still a lot that I want to do. And so this, I mean, I think the past couple of years are the first couple of years where I've actually even been okay with making work about being a mother. Because before I felt like that was something that like, oh, well, don't talk about that part of yourself, or, you know, or questioning like, will people take me seriously as an artist if I make pictures or images with my children in them, or if I make images about, you know, this role of being a mother. But I finally was like, that's what my life is right now. That is such an important part. And I feel like I make the most authentic work when I'm making things about my experience or the experience of people around me. And so I was just like, well, I'm going to make work about this. And this is what Salt of the Earth means to me in terms of like looking at it through my part of my lens. And so I just finished a really large relief carving that I'm kind of presenting as a painting. It's called Carving Out Time, but it's basically a work that takes you through my day as a mom and practicing artist. So the work is quite large. So it measures 60 feet in length and is 8 feet tall. And so it's divided into 5 scenes. So in the first scene is like waking up in the morning with the children. And then it kind of takes you through all these phases of the day. And then it finally ends with me in the studio.
Where can I see this?
So it's gonna be in an exhibition called All Due Respect. And it opens at the Baltimore Museum of Art on November 14th.
It'll
be open to the public. Yeah.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah. And so in that particular work, you see kind of the scenes of the everyday happening. One thing that I really like about the work that I didn't necessarily think about, which was brought to my attention by Tanikia Word, who is the founder of Black Women of Print. So we had an exhibition at High Point Center for Printmaking, and I showed one of the scenes. So I did the blocks and then I was able to print a set of prints from them too. So I showed one of the prints of scene 5. And one of the statements that I really liked that she made was that I'm presenting the everyday woman as heroic. Which is something that I hadn't thought about in this series, but it is. And so she kind of talked about like with history paintings, you kind of see, you know, usually a male figure in some type of triumphant pose or like they just conquered something, you know. And so she kind of talked about, you know, how what did she say? She said, you know, conquering the laundry is heroic.
Right.
For the week. And so that work is really, really special to me for a lot of reasons. One is like the literally and figuratively the biggest thing I've ever done. And I haven't, you know, quite seen anything like it. But I think the work is also kind of the epitome of the phrase, like taking up space, because it does like takes up 60 feet of space or more. So each of those scenes, I really wanted to give a snapshot into, you know, my everyday life. And I kind of, I describe my work in general is like universal and specific. Mm-hmm. Specific in that a lot of these things I'm presenting through my own lens of my life experience, but universal in that I feel like a lot of people can relate to the work also. And I feel like with this work, so many people will be able to relate to the type of images that they see contained within the work. Whether you're a mother, a child, a spouse, I think everybody can have something to take away, or whether you're kind of looking at it just purely from a technical aspect.
Right.
I think it can, you know, there's something for everybody to enjoy with the work.
I love that, LaToya. And I definitely hope I get to see it in person someday. It sounds amazing. So I want to just kind of go back to a couple things that you mentioned earlier, but just giving us a little bit more of a clear picture of, you know, those different scenes that you're walking through every day. You said you homeschool. I know mm-hmm. you're a college professor. I was wondering how old your kids are.
Oh, they are 7 and 5.
Okay. So you're homeschooling pretty young kids. Like you're still kind of in young motherhood, which I think, mm-hmm. you know, that like,
it's intense.
Yeah. Just to say. I mean, what do I say about that? There's so many things to say and I don't have to say anything and you get it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just like that kind of like knowing that that is on your plate at this moment in time, I think for our listeners is, you know, something just so relatable. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit just about how you structure your time, because you're also teaching and you're teaching your kids. So like kind of, I guess, what does like a week in your life look like?
Yeah, so I will start off by saying that I do have a bit of privilege in the fact that I teach in higher education. And so mm-hmm. just the structure of that is like completely different than maybe somebody who's teaching like middle school where they have to be on campus every day. Mm-hmm. So, and then I also have a privilege that my husband is able, we're both able to kind of work from home also. We have a lot of flexibility in terms of that. So I'm just not like doing it by myself. So my husband right. is also really, really important. Right. To the everyday dynamic and just the how we, you know, structure things. So like typically I teach 3 classes a semester. And so maybe the past 3 years I have started stacking one of my days to free up another like morning where I can be home with the children. So like Monday is like my administrative day. So I'm prepping for classes for the week. I'm trying to answer like any important emails, you know, reminding myself of what's all happening in the week.
Mm-hmm.
Tuesday is my teaching day. So I teach 2 classes. I teach a morning class from 9 to 3, and then I teach an evening class from 4 to 10. Monday, I'm also like homeschooling too. Mm-hmm. Tuesdays, since I'm teaching, my husband homeschools the children. Wednesday, I homeschool. So we normally do homeschool from like maybe 9 to 1 or 2.
Yeah.
So we do homeschool in the morning, and then in the afternoon, I maybe have a couple hours where I can either answer emails or see what, you know, chores need to be done really quickly. It just kind of
record
depends.
A podcast interview, you know.
Yes, like today. So if I have any like meetings or people want to do a Zoom or like somebody wants to do like a studio visit, I try to schedule those things in the afternoon to, you know, to make sure I'm blocking out that time.
Mm-hmm.
For homeschooling. Normally Thursdays are my second teaching day of the week. This semester I decided to drop to 2 classes. Just because I have a lot of things like coming up with my art practice. So I wanted to make sure I'm, you know, giving time to that and leveraging mm-hmm. that extra time. And so like Thursday would be the day that my husband would homeschool the guys while I'm teaching. And then I would be home in the evening. And then Friday is, we call it Fun Friday. And so we try to do all of our like fun homeschool things, like music or field trip or mm-hmm. art activity or PE. So we kind of do all those, save all those things for Friday. And then we like, you know, try to have a movie night or something. And then Saturday is like my primary studio day.
Okay. I was just going to ask, so when are you in the studio?
So now like this semester, since I am not teaching on Thursdays, we kind of, my husband and I split the studio days for the week. So he likes to have like consecutive days. Mm-hmm. So his studio days are like Sunday and Monday. And then my studio days are like Thursday and Saturday.
Okay.
And then when the boys go to sleep, I just kind of do whatever I need to do. So a lot of times if it's not like my designated studio day, I usually don't get into, if I do get into the studio, I usually don't get in there to maybe like after nine, when okay. after the boys, you know, are sleeping, I've had a minute to kind of just wind down for the day. But
so
we
is
also,
your studio at home?
So I have a couple spaces. Okay. So when I did the carving out time piece, I had to get a space outside of my home. So mm-hmm. which my normal studio space is in the basement. My husband and I both have enough space in the basement for us to have separate studios. But when I did the carving out time work, I had to rent a separate space.
Okay.
So I was at Maryland Art Place to create that work. So I had that studio from like August of 2020 until like May of 2021 when the museum picked up the work. And then my husband was like, well, we're going to need a space, you know, because we pulled prints. He was like, you need somewhere to store the prints.
Mm-hmm.
When the panels come down from the museum, where are we going to put them?
Right.
So we, once I finished with the space at Maryland Art Place and my lease was up, we got into another larger space. And like, it's not near downtown, but we have a larger studio space.
Are you and your husband sharing it?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so cool. we share that space also.
Awesome. That's so great. Yeah. I love that kind of thinking about how you're structuring your life. And we homeschooled our oldest. He's in fourth grade now, but we homeschooled him through third grade. And so just, I totally get that. Like by the time Friday comes around, it's like, this is, you know, field trip, like fun education day, like we're putting mm-hmm. the books away and we're doing experiential learning. But I don't know, you're kind of making me miss homeschool actually, which I don't know if I've missed it.
Another yeah. reason. So I enjoy it. And so it's not as, we were already like homeschooling before the pandemic
mm-hmm.
and we just kind of built it into our lifestyle. So
right.
it wasn't like an abrupt. So even when there were like one, two, three, we still had like, this is lesson time.
Right.
So, yep. you know, for whatever their age was. So we either watch videos or play game, educational games. And so they just kind of have it. It's just a part of their life. Like
yeah.
doing school is kind of it's kind of normal. Yeah.
I just love that thinking about like structuring your life and your careers kind of based on like your values, like wanting to include family time and wanting to be, you know, a big part of your kids' education, but then also mm-hmm. you both have careers that you're pursuing. And I don't know, I like love thinking about stuff like that. So,
yeah. And it also gives us flexibility too. So like, you know, if either myself or my husband gets a residency opportunity,
yep.
for, you know, and we need to go, we can just take the kids. We don't have to like pull them out of school or, you know, yeah. worry about absences and stuff like that. So, you know, it's working for us now.
Yes.
I'm not going to pretend like it's all roses and all easy.
Of
you know,
course.
Some,
yep.
some things are a bit frustrating. So I've been able to kind of learn more about myself and learn more about my boys through the process. But I mean, I think it's working for our family now. And so,
Yeah.
I'm not sure how long, you know, I plan to do it as long as it continues to work. But like I said, I really enjoyed the flexibility that it affords us.
Well, and that was one of my biggest lessons with homeschooling and kind of having a life built in that way. My husband was, you know, he still is a college professor, but when we were homeschooling, we kind of had that role to mix in and play around. But I just feel like one of my biggest lessons was, you know, I think I will come up with the formula for exactly what works for our family. And then, you know, things change. And like, that's mm-hmm. part of the beauty of it is that you have the flexibility to make changes, you know?
Right.
So I don't know. It's like, it was something that initially brought me a lot of frustration, but then I realized like, no, this is the cool part about it is you get to get to, you know, continually, I guess, transform and evolve as a family.
Right.
So anyway, LaToya, another thing I wanted to talk about in relation to, you know, your work and some themes that you already brought up was just that idea of how you have to care for yourself as human, right? As person, just as LaToya, not just, you know, identifying the labor that you're doing in these different roles or, you know, what you're passionate about and what you want to work on, but also connecting with yourself as a human so that you stay salty, right? you stay able to provide nourishment and care for, you know, creating your art and for your kids and all of that. So I'm just curious to have you talk a little bit about some of the ways that you create space for yourself and what it looks like for you to, you know, really nourish yourself in such a busy season of your life.
Yeah. So I have to kind of think about that on a few different levels. And another thing that I've been really trying to make sure that I don't do is to consider my like studio time as self-care time. Cause like, even though I enjoy that time, I feel like, you know, I'm alone. I don't like people in the studio with me. And so I, you know, either play music, but that is not, you have to remind myself that is not your self-care time. That is your time, you know, you're pouring into your practice. And so, you know, we kind of blur the lines of like, do I separate myself from being the artist self, even though they're the same, but they're not, not the same also. So I, you know, I've been challenging myself that, you know, yes, you spend all day in the studio, but that's not self-care. You know, that's you, you know, getting work done, which, you know, you know, it's good that you happen to love what you do, but that's not the same thing as your self-care time. So yes. I kind of do small things, like realistic things. And so some things for me, I would say on a small level are like scented candles are something that are like self-care and flowers. I love like having fresh flowers around. And so, you know, if it's like, I need a kind of way to just kind of calm myself or something like that. You know, I light a candle. It, you know, I love when things smell good, when things smell good. And so having, you know, just being able to kind of walk past that nice aroma, it's just kind of, you know, a small pleasantry of the day. Taking care of my body physically for me is important. For self-care, but also just again, preservation also. Right. And so I sometimes I do have the tendency to kind of put that last, like, you know, if I'm trying to get ready for a show, I'm like, well, I need to stay up all night to do this. And then I can't stay up all night and then go to the gym. So I've been trying to challenge myself to be, you know, more mindful of that and to make sure I'm putting that time like first as a priority. Other things, like I love good food.
Just like kind of
I do. Sometimes it's like a love it hate relationship, but
because you have normally, to do it, but
but I do enjoy cooking. Like, you know, watching cooking shows is another way that I just kind of unwind.
Me too.
And relax. Massages are important. You know, these are just kind of like small things that I can do that I don't have to like go book a weekend away in order to feel like I'm, you know, engaging in self-care.
Yeah. Enrollment is open for the 6th round of our popular Crit Group Crew program. The Crit Group program places you in a group of 3 to 4 women plus a mentor and, this time, a visiting artist or arts professional. Your group will meet over 3 months, providing an intimate network of accountability and encouragement for each other. Signups for this program right now are limited to just twice a year, so definitely don't miss your opportunity to join us. This program is really for you if you want constructive and helpful feedback on your work, if you have questions that you might want to wrestle with over time with the feedback of a small group, if you're looking to connect with other artist mothers, if you're needing the accountability of peers and others who are engaged in an art practice, If you don't really have a lot of people in your life to talk shop with or discuss your work, if you need connection with other artist mothers but are limited in the time you can commit to building your own community. And this program is really great because it's all done through the flexibility of the internet. It's a virtual program, so your group will meet on Zoom and connect over another channel like Instagram or WhatsApp. So it's really catered to your own schedule and needs of the specific group. And really, we love this program because it just provides you with that deep engagement about your practice that it's hard to get from social media or more short-term relationships that you build within the art career. So as I mentioned, a new aspect of this program is that we are pairing each mentor with a visiting artist or arts professional who will visit your group to give critique on your work. So you can consider the role of your mentor as your facilitator, your encourager, your cheerleader, and then the role of the visiting artist or arts professional that's paired with your mentor is to drop in and give you solid feedback on your work. So you can expect to receive in-depth feedback and critique on your work, weekly connections and conversations with your group facilitated by your mentor, the opportunity to perfect and present an artist talk to your group, access to the Artist Mother Network, which is our online platform created specifically for our community. Plus, there will be 3 special programs on our network for all of the CRIT group participants. We are so excited about the changes and the tweaks that we continue to make to this program. We're just trying to get it to be the best it can be for everyone. And we have a stellar lineup of mentors and visiting artists this time around. You never know who's able to commit and what seasons of life will bring them into a mentorship role. So if there's somebody you see on our roster, definitely don't miss your chance to sign up and work with that person. Enrollment is open now, November 22nd, until groups are filled and space is definitely limited. Thank you, everyone. Happy holidays, and we hope to see you in CRIT Group. I love what you said about how, you know, your art, like making sure that you're not seeing time in the studio as self-care, even though, like you said, you are so grateful to be doing a career that you love, that's not the same thing as like, you know, nourishing yourself as a human, right? And I sometimes I wonder if artists carry that, you know, kind of that dialogue with themselves about, especially artist mothers, how it's so hard to make time for everything. It's hard to get in the studio. But I wonder if some of that, you know, while art is my self-care, is actually tied to not seeing art as a legitimate career, you know, like maybe part of that is, no, this is your work, right? And work is different from play and is different from self-care and is different from rest and nourishment. Like, yes, it might provide you joy and it might feel like a privilege that you love what you're doing, but I don't know. Like, there's just something in the way that you said that I felt really inspired by.
And then it, like, sometimes, like, things kind of can blur the line. So like when I try to go to Art Basel every year, if I'm showing there, it's been the fair that I show with has been digital the past couple of times. I haven't like made a trip to go, but for me, that kind of is, that's something that I can consider like everything.
Right.
Because yes, my
beautiful
work,
location.
Yeah. So my work is up in the fair and I'm talking to people about my work. So that's like the work part.
Right.
But at the same time, I just love art. So I get to go to all the fairs. I get to eat good food. It's just me. I can wake up at noon if I want to. So something like that is a combination where yes, I'm going doing this as a part of my lifestyle and job as an artist. But at the same time, I'm able to to replenish myself and to kind of rejuvenate. So whenever I travel, for art things and I'm outside of the house, I can kind of execute both things.
I love that.
But yeah, but me, like, just my normal, if it's my studio day, like Saturday, that's not like my self-care.
Right.
You know?
Yes, I love that. Couple more questions, LaToya, and then we'll wrap up. This has been so good. I love it. Can you tell me what success means to you?
Yeah, so I think, I don't know if it will ever be a concrete definition for me, because I think as our lives change, or at least for me, as my life changes, that goals are changing and what I want changes. So I feel like my personal definition of success is changing. But, and then I think about success in different areas too. So success in my personal life is not necessarily the same thing as success like in my professional life. But I guess in a nutshell, being able to do things on my own terms, and being fulfilled and being happy with what I'm doing, I guess it's like the basic form of success to me. And I think the specific goals that I have will play into the, like the overall idea of what success is.
I love that. All right. Tell me about one moment in your art career that you felt like overwhelmed with pride for the work that you're doing.
I would say now.
Yes.
I mean, carving out time, I think it was, and it was a massive undertaking. And so, I'm thankful that I was able to do that. And I'm thankful to my husband for allowing me the space and time to be able to really delve in and engage in that work. And so, I'm just really, really proud of that work. And I'm, you know, I've gotten to the point where I'm okay saying it out loud, that, that yes. I'm proud.
Why is that, that so hard for us?
Man, I don't know, but I just feel like the work has, the response that I've gotten from the work has been good, but just how I feel about the work, I'm really proud of it. And I kind of like surprised myself too in the process. And then like, once I made the decision to do it, it was kind of, I was like, how I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I would just kind of had to pull things out of myself. Some things that were there, some things that I didn't know was there. So yeah, I'm just overall like really proud of that work. And I feel like my career is kind of in an upswing right now. So, you know, a lot of things happening, a lot of good things happening. So yeah, I would say now, like this moment, I'm just really proud of.
Well, I love that so much. And I'm so glad we got to talk to you in this moment, because like you said, I just think it can be hard for, you know, women artists, especially, to just identify when things are going well and vocalize that, you know, it's like we feel shame or something. I don't know, but, yeah, I'm really happy for you. And it's just fun to sort of feel like this is your masterpiece, you know, at least it's your masterpiece for right now. I'm sure this is only gonna launch you into making bigger and better work. But just to get to talk to you about it is exciting. LaToya, let's close by having you answer five final questions that I always offer up to all of our artists, just for us to get to know you a little bit better. So just curious to know, who is your biggest art crush?
I have a few, but...
You can say a few. It's okay.
So I have a few people, and I guess they're kind of like the people who are influencing my practice now. I would say Kerry James Marshall, just because he's basically the inspiration behind the large work that I just talked about. So he did this really huge woodcut that I saw for the first time, I believe in 2014. But it's basically like eight feet tall and like maybe 12 panels wide. And so when I saw that, it was like, oh my God, I never even realized, like, I was already a fan of his work, but seeing that woodcut in person, it just kind of spoke to me personally in such, you know, a profound way, just because I was really engaging in my printmaking practice mm-hmm. at that time. And I thought, you know, I was doing large work, but then when I saw that, I was like, wow, this is amazing.
Go bigger. Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing. So the scale of the current work that I just did was inspired by the scale of that print. Mm. So I was like, you know, I had to build up my confidence to be able to think that I would, something like that would be possible for me to do. Mm-hmm. So he is an art crush. And then just all of his work, I think, is just amazing. I was able to see his exhibition Mastery when it was traveling around the country. I saw when it came to New York. And yeah, it was just phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Elizabeth Catlett is always an art crush. Mm-hmm. You know, I call her my art mother. Mm-hmm. So she, you know, anytime I talk about my influences, I usually talk about her first. And then Angelica Crosby is another person. I really love the way that they represent interior space. Mm-hmm. Also another figurative artist, and they also combine a lot of different materials and processes together. And so that's kind of the vein that I am in with, like, combining my printmaking and painting practice together. So, and there's so many others, but I think in terms of, like, the vein that I'm in right now, I would say those three.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay. What's your favorite place to travel or a dream trip you'd like to go on?
Well, my favorite type of places to travel are anywhere where it's sunny and warm. I love tropical weather. I hate being cold. So anywhere where there's sunshine and, like, beautiful vegetation and good food, that is where I want to be. Mm. So I don't know. I don't have a specific place of places that I have been to. I really enjoyed being in Costa Rica. Mm-hmm. But
we'll say Costa Rica.
Yeah, so we'll say Costa Rica. Yeah.
Okay, tell me a book or a film that you feel like has inspired you greatly in your life.
Well, the current book that I'm reading now is called Get Good with Money by Tiffany Alice, also known as the Budgetista.
Yes, so I've heard some podcasts by her. She's great.
Yeah. So I listen to their podcast as well. So that's, like, the current book that I'm reading now. I feel like whatever I'm reading now is the thing that's currently inspiring me.
Yes.
Inspiring me. And just kind of thinking about, I like the way that she talks about financial wholeness. And so that's another kind of personal goal for myself and also for my family. We've been kind of thinking about like the future and generational wealth and just some things that I want to have in place, because I've been kind of, like, thinking about what it would look like if I were to step away from teaching and do art full time. Mm-hmm. And so in order for me to even feel comfortable doing that, there's a lot of, like, things that we would need to get in place, like, financially and just kind of setting things up. So for the past couple of years, my husband and I have been delving a lot more into thinking about, you know, just our family's, like, finances and our financial literacy and like financial health, so to speak, health and well-being, so to speak. And just even kind of thinking about, again, what we want to pass on to our children, thinking about that, you know, as being a matriarch and thinking about legacy and just kind of passing things on to the next generation. So just making sure that those things are in order. So Get Good with Money is what I'm in the vein of right now.
Great reference. And actually, one of the podcast episodes I've heard her on, she talks specifically about that. So definitely recommend that book if you all listening are interested to hear, you know, more on that idea of, like, generational financial health and wholeness. Okay, Latoya, what's your favorite meal?
Oh, favorite meal. It's so hard for me to pick favorites. I know what my favorite dessert is. My favorite dessert is ice cream in general. I'm a big ice cream fan. There's this brand called Talente, I believe is how you pronounce it.
Okay.
But it's, like, amazing. It's like a gelato, like a kind of gelato ice cream. And so they come in these nice, sturdy plastic containers. And so they make, like, great use in the studio.
Yes. Love it. Dual functioning.
Yeah. So, like, when I mix up paints or inks and I need it to be stored, like, it's the perfect container.
Well, not to go down the ice cream rabbit hole, but have you ever had Jenny's ice cream?
No, I think I've heard somebody mention that, like, on a podcast I was listening to.
It's my favorite. It's like small business, like small batch. I think she started in Columbus. So they mostly have like branches in, you know, like Ohio, Tennessee, Kentucky, like that area. But oh my gosh, it's so good. I think you can buy it at like Whole Foods or, you know, kind of specialty stores. They sell some of their like little pints of it. It's like one of those, you know, I can't believe I'm spending $6 on a pint of ice cream, but then you eat it and you're like, okay, yes, this is why. It's so good.
I have to check it out.
Yes. Okay. And last but not least, always like to offer you the space to give a shout out to somebody who supports you in your work.
Oh, hands down, I would say my husband, Ariston Jax is his name. He is so important, has been so important. I just appreciate his support. He always is like pushing me and encouraging me. And it just, yeah, just been really, really just helpful. Whether it's like helping me ship off works, or he set up my studio to do when I needed to get ready to do carving out time. He like set up everything for me. Mm. Yeah, just kind of anything that I need, like he's there. and he's just really supportive. And also he just kind of like, you know, goes through these spells where he's like, okay, I'll be the single parent while you get, mm-hmm. while you get this work done. And so that was the case with carving out time. And so I was on sabbatical from teaching during that time. And he just kind of let me have like an in-house residency. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I would maybe do an hour or so of school with the boys. And then like the rest of the day, I could just be free to work on carving out time. And even when I was trying to like, it was hard for me to kind of step out of mom role and get to the studio. Like I would be trying to like, well, let me cook dinner real quick, or let mm-hmm. me do this. He was like, we don't need that. He's like, you need to go.
Right.
You need to be in the studio. So I'm just so thankful for his support. And he's always kind of reminding me of my worth and not to settle for things. And he's kind of one of those people that's always looking at the bigger picture. So sometimes when I'm like trying to do something at 10, he's like, well, you need to be at 15 or you need to be at 20. So yeah, just really thankful for him.
Mm, I love that, LaToya. Real quick before we close, I meant to do this earlier, but I just wanted to give you the chance to just share anything about your print collective with, you know, our audience, Black Women of Print. Is there just real briefly anything you want to share about that collective and like your goals and what you all do?
Yeah, so Black Women of Print is a collective of Black women printmakers, the brainchild of Tanikia Word, who is like the founder and kind of orchestrated everything to bring us together. We started as a core group of maybe there was six of us founding members, but we have since opened it up. And I believe we just kind of accepted the next like cohort of people into the organization. But our goal is basically to promote the lives and works of Black women printmakers, historic and contemporary. We have a website, blackwomenofprint.com. I believe it was just revamped maybe like last month. So you can go there and read more about the profiles of some of the members, and you can kind of read our mission and vision statement. We currently have an exhibit up right now that was organized by Tanikia Word and Delita Martin, who was also a member. It's called A Black Matriarchal Lineage in Printmaking. Is at the High Point Center for Printmaking in Minnesota. Mm. We were there in September for the opening and got a really great response. And I believe our next group show is going to be in March of 2022. And it's going to be, I believe, at St. Lawrence University.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing, and just excited to, you know, share some links and info about that collective, because that work is so important. LaToya, thank you so much for taking the time. I hope you have a great rest of your day, and just, yeah, enjoy hearing from you and getting sort of an inside look at the amazing work that you're doing as an artist mother. So thank you for sharing.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.